B-Pod Studios.
No one says it like they do.
What do you mean?
Well, what do you mean?
Felger and Mads.
I'm just making it up. Totally making it up.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Dragic, who was so big in the first two games, misses another Miami three. The clock hits triple zeros. The Celtics get Gordon Hayward back. They get their swagger back. They get their game back. And they are back in the series. They win by a final of 117 to 106. And the Miami lead is cut to 2-1 with 4 long days to think about it.
Ooh. And those are these some days that everybody's going to have to think about. If you think of the Celtics, the way they play early on, you can build on that. What you'll say, if you're the Celtics also, you'll say, okay, what did you do really to give this, to get Miami back in this game? We must improve on that.
117-106 is the final. Celtics win game three.
And that's where we left the Celtics. Saturday night? When was that? Saturday night. They win game three, climb back in the series. Game four tonight here on 98.5 The Sports Hub. And so, let's discuss. What do you think about tonight, Maz?
I have the slightest damn clue, but I lean the I lean the pendulum swinging back to Miami. That's what I lean. Because I believe that the first two games happened for a reason. I don't believe the Celtics' problems were magically cured overnight. I think they played better in game three. I think they have the capacity to repeat what they did. I'm not telling you they don't. I just don't know whether they can sustain it. I don't connect it all to Hayward. I think Miami will make some adjustments, and I think the single biggest problem the Celtics have in this series is Adebayo. That's what I think.
Let's see how he handles this question, Murray. I'm curious. Are the Celtics the better team? Are the Celtics the more talented team?
With Hayward, sure.
See what he did? Yeah,
there's always
a straight answer.
Yeah.
It's just never.
I mean, Hayward's back, sure. If the Celtics have those five guys on the floor at the end of the game, they're really hard to defend.
So before Hayward, they were not the more talented team.
I think that Tice is a major weakness there in this series.
It's just still not a straight answer.
There's always shades of gray when it comes to anything
the
Celtics
NBA
related.
Crowbar. Yeah. NBA crowbar.
But you and I disagree on some fundamental
things. So just
things.
Answer the question.
I don't think Kemba Walker's as good as you do.
Okay, so you don't think the Celtics are more talented?
No, I think that's pretty close.
Yeah, but
I do. I think it's pretty close.
Well, that's still not a straight answer.
Yes.
I'm not telling you that Miami's more talented. I'm telling you, I think it's pretty close. I'd call it pretty much a dead heat, which is what I said from the beginning. Adebayo's better than anything you got in the middle.
But if you had to pick one, though, which of the two?
More talented.
I wouldn't.
Oh, this is so painful.
Oh, boo.
That is...
But I don't understand why you think that is so clear.
Of all the waffling facilitation, even Greenberg is sitting there somewhere going, come on, dude, say something.
Get off the fence.
Say the two guys asking the question. Like,
the Celtics are more talented. The Celtics are more talented. It's obvious.
No, it isn't obvious.
Oh, it's obvious.
It is not obvious.
Do you know they've led for 111 of the 149 minutes in the series? That's like 75% of the series.
Yeah, except that they've been behind in the only scoreboard that matters, which is games.
No. But, I mean, that says something. So this is before Hayward. You know, this is discounting Hayward's minutes. They've controlled the series. They've been in control of most of the games most of the time. That is just a fact. That's just a fact. And then they've fallen apart and lost the games for reasons other than talent. That's a fact. I ain't on any fence. The Celtics are more talented going in. The Celtics are more talented before Hayward. They're more talented after Hayward. And if they put it together, they win the series. That's the way it was from day one. I don't know if they can put it together. No waffling there. That's how I feel about the thing. Do you feel that the problems were magically cured because they threw some chairs around the locker room after game two?
No.
So this narrative's going to bug the crap out of me.
Oh, I'm already annoyed by it because it immediately, after they win Saturday night, the media blew it out of proportion. It was a good thing that they had that fight after game two. Brothers fight, families fight. See what Marcus Smart said? Oh, so everything's fixed. Everything's fixed. And they all love each other? Okay.
Well, pick one. I mean, first of all, green teamers, pick one. Was it either overblown? In which case, if it was overblown, it had no impact on your game three win, right?
Right.
Because if it's overblown and it was nothing, nothing to see about anything, then it had no impact. Or if it did have an, if you want to play the storyline that they got themselves right with that post-game meeting, well, then it wasn't overblown because it must have been really something to give them that turning point to be what they were in game three. So, baby Celtics fan, you must pick one. Overblown, no impact for game three, or properly blown, impact for game three. Pick one.
Okay? How about properly blown and impact for game three, but no impact on the series?
So this is what I think, and frankly, I don't even know how much of it... I think it was properly blown, okay? I think it was properly portrayed.
Inflated.
For what it was, okay? But if that's what it took to get them right, then they're not going to win the series.
I just don't think we know yet because they basically dominated in game three. They never faced any kind of real adversity
exactly.
in that game. There any pressure that would lead to any kind of pissy behavior. So tonight's the real test to see where they're at.
I mean, I just think... So it took that for them to turn around and win game three. I mean, is that it's kind of common. And, you know, even in the bubble, for teams to go down 2-0 and play with their backs against the wall and get back in the series by winning the third game, you don't need to throw a chair across the room to sort of have a wake-up call for game three, knowing you got to win it. Denver wasn't throwing chairs across the room after game two, and they rebounded in their series last night just fine.
I was just about to say, what happened in the other side?
So
what happened there?
So, no. You don't get to play it like that. I think the thing was properly blown because I still think there's issues in that room. There's issues in that room in terms of whose team it is. And is there a little struggle for whose team it is? Do certain guys want to be the man and they're not the man? Do certain guys think they shouldn't be the, you know, like, do they all think they're the man and no one can take that subsidiary role? And I'm talking about Marcus Smart. Like, to listen to Marcus Smart when he addressed the media, yesterday or the day before, whenever it was, I feel like the dude's taking credit for what happened in game three. And I'm a Marcus Smart guy, but I want to say, you know, did they win because of you and what happened in the locker room or in spite of you? Did they overcome your childish behavior or did you, you know, was that a wake up call? So that's my question. That's my first question for Celtics fans. Is Marcus Smart the catalyst? Or is he like an impediment?
Impediment.
What do you think?
I just think he should be more mature and professional.
Oh, who's straddling the fence now?
No, I think he's actually a positive. I just think he's gone in a bad way here these last couple of games, and I think a lot of it has to do with how well he shot in the series against Toronto. He has a tendency to have an inflated ego and think he's a better shooter than he actually is.
How about that thing impediment. In the locker room? How about the thing in the locker room after game two? Him chucking chairs across the room, calling guys out, huffing out of the locker room. You're all on some BS. That whole thing. Was that really necessary? Did that help the team get right? Or did they have to overcome that nonsense to get right for game three?
No, to me, they had to overcome it. I don't think that that's it at all. And so the problem with Smart is he's got value. He's very competitive. He's tremendous in the key spots, all of that. His talent's not as good as he thinks it is.
Well, that's for sure.
That's the problem with Marcus Smart. So Marcus Smart thinks that he's the most important guy on the team, and he isn't.
Stu, play that first Smart cut where he's asked by Abby Chin. I'll take the question out. He's asked Abby Chin about that incident and how he felt about it. Listen to the first word he says.
Electrifying.
Electrifying. Oh. It was electrifying. Like, I feel like he's taking credit for the thing. Like, It wasn't a dysfunctional mess. It was electrifying. Oh, I see. Go ahead, play the whole answer, please.
Electrifying. What happened in the locker room? You know, we're a family. Family fights all the time. You know, I fight with my brothers all the time. But at the end of the day, we can fight with each other. Nobody else can.
Okay, we can fight with each other. Nobody else can. I like the line. I like that line. But electrifying?
Electrifying.
How about childish? How about unnecessary? How about...
immature.
Dysfunctional.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, so look, I'm a little late to this take. I think Gasper, I thought, had a really good point when he was here on Friday about this whole thing. I'll just replay it for you here. Go ahead.
I can think of one guy who took more shots than Jason Tatum, which was Marcus Smart. I'm done venerating this guy. Let's just call it what it is. He's an exciting player to watch. He plays really hard. That's great. But he's a front-running sore loser. That's what he is. You saw it at the end of game six against Toronto when he almost started a fight. You see it at the end of this game where in the last 2.5 minutes, he took probably the two worst shots they took. Game's tied at 95, about 2:40 to go. He takes a contested turnaround jumper in the lane. Mm. Horrible shot.
Yep, right.
Horrible. Dragic hits that long rainbow three to put Miami up 5, 100-95. Smart comes back down, gets a pass. The only two people who touch the ball are Walker and Smart. He jacks up a 28-foot three, and he misses. I think sometimes you have to sort of know your role, and I think I'm done with the idea of this guy misbehaving, showing emotional volatility, being a front runner, lacking emotional maturity, and then everybody just chalks it up to, well, you know, he's competitive. He's not the only guy in the league who's competitive. There are other guys. Jimmy Butler's competitive. Do you see him behaving like this? Jimmy Butler's making his teammates better. He's making his teammates believe in him. Marcus Smart is fighting with his teammates.
Okay, front running sore loser. It says Chris Gasper. So is Marcus Smart a catalyst for this team or an impediment to this team?
I mean, when he acts like he did in game two, to me, he's an impediment.
I'll tell you what, off the floor, he's an impediment. If this is straddling the fence, excuse me. On the floor, end of the game, I want him out there. Hashtag winning plays, like I've been a believer in that forever. The stuff off the floor, Chris is right. The stuff off the floor, Chris is right.
See, I would say up until this point in his career, he's been a catalyst. But they've also been a team that wasn't ready to take the next step. Well, now they are. Now the young guys are ready to sort of mature and blossom and become stars. And I say the young guys because I sort of put Brown and Tatum in a separate class as Smart, because Smart was here a little bit earlier. So now they're ready to go buy him.
But I also think that's part of the problem. Like you just said, Smart's been here earlier than those guys, and I think that he probably feels like, well, I'm the veteran. You should defer to me. Which is crazy. He lacks self-awareness.
Right, and I think that's mucking up this process.
No question.
The team, you know, in identity. Whose team is it, and who do you look to, and that sort of thing. I think it's all mucked up, and Smart is part of it. Because I don't think he's willing to accept a secondary role or what. He's part of that confusion in there. And the way he handled himself after the game is part of that confusion. So I think it's a good point. So they have that blow up after game two. They win game three. So is that the reason? And if so, is that a good thing or a bad thing? And so here you are, game four. So let's discuss. That's how we're going to start off the program. The impact of Gordon Hayward's return, Maz. What do you think that it is? Do you think it's a game changer for the series?
I mean, I think it helps. I don't think it's the single greatest thing in the series. I don't. I mean, it helps. And tactically, it helps on a couple of levels. One is that Hayward is a guy that passes the ball and makes good decisions. And I think that that can be infectious. So if you've got a guy on the floor who's making good choices, then absolutely, it makes a difference. I also think that if Hayward's out there and entices the guy he's replacing, or even Grant Williams to some degree, but much smaller. Okay, let's not put them in the same breath. Let's stick to Hayward. Well, you got to go out into perimeter and defend all five guys. Now Adebayo's got to come out of there a little bit. Is that why they were able to go to the basket and get 60 points in the paint? Because Adebayo had to drift out a little bit more? Is that part of the reason? I mean, I think that the biggest mismatch the Celtics have in this series is Adebayo. That's the biggest mismatch. And if Hayward's on the floor and that helps negate Adebayo defensively, then I think you got to keep doing it.
Okay. With Hayward back, it allowed Marcus Smart to defend Goran Dragic for
correct.
The rest of
another
the night.
Thing.
And
yep.
He
another
did a
thing.
Phenomenal job on him, and he, you know, turns out the offense really does go through him. I didn't really notice that, I guess, the first couple of games. But if you can bottle him up, well, you'll probably get more of a result like Saturday night.
Okay, I want to discuss the role of Marcus Smart. Again, catalyst or impediment, Gordon Hayward's return, what that means, the style of play that they played in Game 3. And, you know, just the impact of that blow-up after game two in the locker room. 617-779-0985. Couple open lines. We'll go to you right after these words.
Felger and Mads on 98.5 The Sports Hub. And streaming anywhere you go. On the Sports Hub app.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Not complaining.
Oh, you're the mean boss. Aw.
It's just Felger.
No. It's always no.
Felger, Mass. 98.5, The Sports Hub.
The funny thing about that was, I think we were, you know, I don't know how many days we've been here, but it's in the 70s, right?
Yeah.
And we average, what are we, like 24 or 25 years old on average. we're all on the same floor. We've had 30 practices and 22 games. We have not been able to leave this thing, right? So my first thought was when we got here, yeah, how are we going to get through 3 weeks of practice without a fight? Like, because everybody's going to be so stir crazy. And so, you know, just it's just such a unique environment. So it surprised me that it took that long to get a little bit emotional. So I actually am not surprised at all that us and several other teams, right, have had moments like that. And I'm sure everyone's had moments like that. You know, ours just happened to be in a locker room that's really like this open partition with media standing right next to it. So it doesn't like it. It was part of the experience. It's not like a huge deal. Every team I've been on in 13 years has had, you know, has been brought to a lot to heavy emotions. And this experience probably would trigger that more than any other that I've ever been through. So it's like I said, like when we were practicing, we were putting together our practice plans for July. I was like, how can we make sure that we compete, get in the shape we need to get into, but also can walk back up to our floor and not want to, you know, keep the competitiveness going, right? And so I thought it was, it's probably long overdue, but just part of the experience.
Brad Stevens on with Beadle and Zoe this afternoon. You can catch that full interview on 98.5thesportshub.com, the app. That's how he explained away the locker room fight after game two. Pent-up emotions, young kids, bubble environment. Do you believe those were the reasons that that happened?
No.
Me neither.
I believe all those things are true. I believe that, yes, they can wear on each other and get on each other's nerves, and all that is true. Absolutely no question about it. I think this was about losing and not executing at the end of games and let their egos get in the way. That's what I think it was.
And general immaturity.
Yes.
In other words, if there was no apocalypse and they were in Boston and Miami and going back and forth, if they were down two games and lost the way they lost, they would have fought in the Boston locker room or the Miami locker room or wherever the heck they happened to be.
Yeah, doesn't matter.
Because the team still has some issues and some maturity. And you better hope it's just maturity, because that implies that they grow out of it and figure it out. They could just be a bad fit together. That's still a possibility, you understand. And so that was going to come out whether you were in Orlando, Miami, Boston, or Timbuktu. So that's what I think. I think, you know, I'm not asking Brad Stevens to say that, but I think he's really glossing over the issue on the team by saying it was the bubble and all of that. So anyway, your thoughts to you as promised. Tim at the pharmacy. Jimmy, if you could pop him up. Hi, Tim. Go ahead.
Hey, I just want to call and say, wasn't Marcus Smart the one a few years back that punched a mirror the other day?
Yes.
In his hotel room?
Yes.
Yeah, so he's immature. He's just mad that they lost. So he just lost control of himself and just was punching things, and he did it in the locker room instead of in the hotel room, and at least he didn't cut his wrist this time.
It's okay. I'm sorry. I thought you were implying something else. No, when he broke a window frame in L.A., right?
Yeah, a picture frame, yeah.
Again, after he hero-balled a late game, wasn't it? Didn't he go down the floor and try a buzzer beater Lakers that missed?
Sounds right.
And wasn't there a Instagram ass model sitting in the front row or something, Murray?
There was some sort of involvement there, yeah.
But between the game losing shot and the ass model and the hotel and the broke, you know, slice in the hand and all that, yes. And obviously you want to go back to Oklahoma State, and he went into the stands like, yes, the guy's got a temper. It's clear. So on the floor, I think that serves him to a degree. Off the floor, I think it's mucking up the process of whose team this is and them settling down and that whole thing. I think the team's still working their way through it. And again, you better hope they're working their way through it and it's not just sort of permanent divisions that will never figure itself out, because I don't think they figured it out in game three.
No, nor do I. Nor do I. Because again, you got to see them blow a lead and then handle it before they can take the next step. And when I say that, I mean they blow a lead on the floor, call a timeout, come back out there and take the lead and win the game. Like bounce back in that way. So I think he's got to figure, he's the one that's going to have to sacrifice. Because again, he's been with the team the longest, and the other two kids are better than he is. They're both better. So I want Smart on the floor at the end of the game. My guess is the Celtics are trying to convince him of that. Like, hey, these guys will help you, not hurt you. So get out of the way a little bit.
John in New Hampshire. Hi, John.
Hey, guys, you guys are so off base on who the culprit is after the first two games. It's Jaylen Brown. Go back and watch the tapes. He doesn't move on offense. And after playing great defense in the first series against the Raptors, well, the Sixers too, he wasn't playing defense. And so Smart went after him in the locker room. It's so freaking clear, and you guys are sleeping on it.
So is that Marcus Smart's role, though? So that's sort of what we're talking about, whether Jaylen Brown deserved it or not. Side topic. All three of them, frankly, kind of bug me. I think Marcus Smart thinks
with good reason.
You know, he thinks he's something he's not, and he's an emotional hothead, and it's really just because he can't control his emotions. I think Jaylen Brown is a clubhouse lawyer.
Know-it-all.
Who thinks he's the smartest guy in the room. You know, maybe it's the Cal sort of thing. I don't know. He's just got this attitude, this sort of off-the-floor attitude. Like, he's above it, or a clubhouse lawyer.
Just smarter than everybody.
Again, how I would describe it. And then Jason Tatum thinks he's Michael Jordan. Like, he's got the Dookie basketball attitude. And I think you just mix it all together, and they haven't figured out how to coexist yet. That's really the thing. And you don't know it during the regular season. You don't know it in good times. You know it in the bad times. And I still don't know if they've all figured it out.
And if they're going to win championships, they have to figure it out. They have to. Otherwise, as you said, then you got to break it up. I mean, so what do you want to end up again? Like Oklahoma City with Durant and Westbrook and that sort of thing? And you say, and Harden initially, and they got to blow that thing apart because it didn't work.
To the caller's point, though, I think the biggest difference I saw in game three individually was Brown. I mean, I think he elevated more than anyone else between game two and game three.
I think he might have played the best game of his career.
Seriously.
In game three. He was all over the floor. He was terrific defensively. He was terrific offensively. He went to the basket. He passed. He had five assists in that game. When does Jaylen Brown ever get five assists?
Ball sticks.
I mean, seriously, I looked it up and see he's had like five or six games in his career where he's had five assists. That was one of them. So to me, I'm not joking. I think it might have been the best game of his career.
We've got Dave and Sharon. He's up next with Felger and Maz. Hi, Dave.
Hey, guys. How you doing? I'm just calling in support of Marcus Smart, actually. I know a lot of people are down on his actions and think he's immature, but who else is going to be the emotional leader of this team if it's not Marcus Smart? Jaylen doesn't have that attitude. Tatum certainly doesn't. I mean, I'm not sure if they ever will. I mean, if we don't have a leader, who's it going to be other than Smart?
So do you need an emotional leader?
I mean, it doesn't hurt.
I mean, yes, and that's like a role guy.
Right.
That's, you know, Draymond Green, right. Marcus Smart, like that. You know, I don't know. Does Draymond, I mean, Draymond Green can act like a clown and, you know, overstep for sure. So maybe, I don't know. I'm genuinely asking this. It's not rhetorical. I don't know the answer. But does he go flying into the locker room after a tough loss and start throwing things across the room and calling guys out and like getting in Steph Curry's face and Thompson's face? Like, does he do that thing?
I don't get the sense that he does. But I also want to check the quote unquote birth order, because was Curry there first?
I don't remember. I don't know.
So I mean, I want to look at that timeline, because again, I think this is a factor. I think that, you know, whoever's there first is sort of the guy that has his stake in the ground. Everyone else comes in, and now you kind of have to adapt to that. So, I mean, I'll double check it with Golden State. It's fair.
You're right. Draymond Green was a second-round pick either way. You know, people forget, because Marcus Smart's rolling around on the floor, and typically the roll-around-on-the-floor guy is not the number six overall pick.
Correct.
But he was a high lottery pick. He was a sixth overall pick, and he got there before these guys. So he thinks he's, like, on equal footing, and he can't control his temper. And so, again, meanwhile, Brown thinks he's the smartest guy in the room, and Tatum thinks he's the best player in the league. And you put it all together, and meanwhile, Skippy Magoo there is in the middle of the room saying, guys, calm down, fellas.
Don't pick me up and throw me like a chair.
And no one's listening to him.
Gee willikers.
I don't think one game solved all that. Back to your Celtics thoughts. I want to talk about the return of Gordon Hayward and the Gordon Hayward staying in the bubble despite the pending birth of his first son. I want to hit on that after Murray's update coming up right here.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Felger, Mass. Hey, when you call and say two things, three things, you're going to have to wait for me to reach for a pen.
Number one.
And then I'm going to have to write it down.
Because they know how to build winning relationships.
I, for one, am not smart enough to keep two or three things in my head.
Felger, Mass.
So we prefer just a single thought.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
I mean, Robin could be, you know, having a baby at any point in time. You know, I think it's probably something that I'll be here And you know, by the time I get back, I might miss the birth, you know, if she just goes in and rushes into the hospital. So, you know, we discussed it, we prayed about it, and I think it's probably best if I stay here and, you know, help our team.
Starting Celtics, just want a quick word on Gordon Hayward and his wife. And why am I blanking on her real name?
Not Robin.
Robin. Yeah. Jeez, sorry. Not Penelope. Robin.
That's how the Penelope thing came
I know. Robin.
came
Robin.
To be in the first place.
I want to give these guys credit. I have a lot of respect for what they've done. And you know, if you've listened to the show, you know how I feel about this. You know, whether it's this or on TV, I've talked about it several times. It pisses a bunch of you off. But I do. I am sort of old school. Maybe you call me backward. But either way, I do sort of feel that some of these paternity leaves and these dual parental leaves have gotten kind of crazy and have gone a little too far. And, you know, I just think that, well, this is what I think. I think that Gordon Hayward and Robin deserve a lot of credit for doing what they're doing. It's a legit sacrifice. You know, he's legitimately sacrificing something here to, I don't know, live up to his end of the bargain at work, which I still feel is important. Family is obviously super important, and there's nothing more important than family. But your career is also important, and your work is also important. And the work and the career that you have that supports your family and allows them to live the lifestyle that they lead is important. And you also owe it to the people that you work with. If you can work and help them towards an important goal like this, you know, and you do it, I have a lot of respect for that. And so I have a lot of respect for the Haywards for giving something up legitimately so he can pursue a lifelong goal and also support the people that he works with. That's important, and that's an important virtue too. I'm not telling you it's more important than family, but it's awfully damn important. And, you know, a lot of credit to the Haywards for taking that approach. I respect it.
I mean, look, I'm not trying to pick sides, okay, because they were a couple. I think most of the credit goes to her.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I think she's the one that encouraged him to stay, because if she really wanted him home.
Oh, he has to go.
And it were really important to her for him to be home, he would go. So to me, I do. I give her the credit for it. I think she said to him, look, it's our fourth one. You're in the NBA. You're in the conference final. You got a chance to win a championship that you've already missed time. You were home with us when you were rehabbing anyway. Stay. We're good.
Yeah,
I got family here. We got it under control. No problem.
I got this. We got the correct care. Family's here. It's a nice surprise because, I mean, it was a given, right? Like, when this thing started, Gordon Hayward is going to leave at some point in the middle of the playoffs, in the middle of September, when his wife gives birth to their first son. Like, that was it. And it changed. I didn't think that was going to happen.
I mean, really, I think she's the driving force behind it, if I had to guess.
Good for her.
Yeah, I think it's really, I think it's largely about her. And she convinced him, go back there, play basketball, don't worry about me. Something bad happens or we need you back home, we'll let you know. I'm convinced that that's how it went down, because that's how it would go down in 90% of all relationships.
Good for them. Again, too many of you think it's a chance to blame millennials, bash millennials. But boy, millennial has a baby and they think the world stops. Everything stops for you. And it doesn't. It doesn't. Especially in an environment like that. I mean, that's team sports. Everyone else, you know, has devoted their life to that quest of a championship and playing at that level. And so they're all independent and they're all, I'm sorry, dependent on each other. They're all dependent on each other. And so the world does not stop for you. And I don't know. I respect the move.
And Mike, think about it, though. Like, in a normal environment, they'd have been able to do both. You just had 3 days off between games, for crying out loud. Like, in theory, they could have set it up so they induced her between games. He flies home. He's there for the birth. Everything good. Yep, 2 days, and I'm back, and I'm playing. Bang. No problem. So the COVID thing just added a whole layer to it that wouldn't have otherwise, with the quarantining and everything else, he would have missed time.
Okay, on the floor, he helps. I don't think you need him to beat Miami. I don't, because I think you're more talented than Miami without him. But if you are going to be this fragile, and if your issues of, you know, late game and handling the pressure and the way the offense, you know, gums up in key moments, if you're going to play down from your talent, then maybe you do need him. Okay, I don't think you should. If you were a more functional team in key moments, you wouldn't need him. But if you're not going to be that functional team, then you do need him, because he is another guy that, I mean, I think his greatest gift is ball handling and just sort of settling the offense, right? He usually gets them. The ball usually goes to the right place when he's out there, whether he's shooting or he's just doing a little penetration and then kicking back out or finding the open guy. He's a sure ball handler, and it's just the ball's not going to stick with him necessarily, and it's just every time he's out there, the offense is a little more functional. And if you got that in those key spots where in these first couple games, the ball's sticking or it's not moving or it's hero ball or one-on-one, he helps alleviate that.
Tremendous decision maker. I mean, really, to me, that's his greatest asset. He almost never makes a bad decision.
But whether he's there or not, the biggest factor, he was not the key, I don't think, and I think you agree, Maz, he wasn't the key to Game 3. The key to Game 3 was their approach, that they attacked the paint. They attacked the basket. I think this is from Chris Forsberg, NBC Sports Boston. Celtics finished with 60 points in the paint. That's 18 points higher than their playoff average. Okay, they shot 30 free throws. That's 5 over their playoff average. And their offensive rating as a result was 117. It was their highest of the series and their best since they played Philly. He says that drives were the lifeblood of the offense. In the Game 2 loss, Celtics registered only 42 total drives. In Game 3, the drive total was 58. So they had 16 more drives. That's what it was all about.
No question.
Attacking.
To me, that's what 100%. I put the large majority of it on that. The only possible thing I can come up with there that might be related to Hayward is that if Tice isn't on the floor, Miami's going to spread out a little bit more because Hayward's a threat to make shots that maybe Tice isn't. That's the only thing. But to me, the big thing is they exploited mismatch. How many times did Smart back Dragic down there and just overpower him?
So, and that I thought was a huge adjustment, too, that Murray mentioned. Smart on Dragic. Head of the snake, as I said yesterday or the other day. Like that. That is because I do think that Dragic, most of the time out there, sets the tempo of that offense.
Yeah.
And if you can get in his face, that's big. And does that mean that, I mean, it shouldn't necessarily automatically mean that, but does it mean that that matchup then flips on the other end of the floor? And is that why Smart is on Dragic on the other side?
Not necessarily always. You know, not, I mean, because teams will alter that.
Yeah.
But if that's how Miami's going to play it, they say, well, we're okay doing that anyway because Smart's the least of the offensive threats. Then Smart should take his ass down to the paint and overpower him, do what he did. That's the strength of Smart's offensive game, aside from the passing and the, you know, the ball movement and that sort of thing. Like, Smart's got a good offensive sense, but his strength as a scorer is down by the hoop. He's stronger than most guys. He can overpower him. He can finish. And if they foul him, he can make his free throws. He's an 80% free throw shooter.
So here's another little quick advanced metric thing from Forsberg. Celtics typically average Murray 3.31 seconds per touch this postseason. That's high. That's the second highest among all playoff teams. Only Portland was higher at 3.42. So the ball gets sticky. That's a bad stat.
Yeah.
The ball sticks with the Celtics. But on Saturday, Boston's touch time, Murray, plummeted to 2.89 seconds per touch. So that's very dorky, but...
And I usually hate these kind of advanced numbers and advanced statistics, but this I'm interested in because it was blatantly obvious that the ball was sticking, especially with someone like Jason Tatum in Game 1.
So in Game 3, it tells you two obvious things. The ball moved better and they attacked. Simple as that.
Yeah, really, it is. It's that simple.
The ball moved better and they penetrated. And I think Gordon being, you know, Hayward being out there helps, but I don't think they need him out there to do that. Move the ball and attack a little
bit.
They
went back to what they normally do when they're successful.
Okay, so there's that. Back to your calls on the Celtics in our long commercial-free segment next.
It's Felger and Maz on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Follow these guys on Twitter at Felger and Maz.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
By and large, we don't remember the last segment.
Felger and Maz.
I mean, I don't remember what I said last segment.
I don't remember what I said 60 seconds ago.
Felger and Maz.
You don't remember who we are or what we said last week.
Yeah, but Felga, I'm the highlight of your show.
98.5, The Sports Hub.
The Celtics getting themselves back into the series against the Heat with a victory on Saturday. Boston said its response is proof that there is more than enough resolve within this team to turn the entire series around and win it. So, Richard, what do you think was the difference in Game 3?
I'm going to say this. It was Gordon Hayward right? Just having him on the court. Now, he didn't have this amazing game. It wasn't over the top. But having a guy that grew up in the Brad Stevens system, you don't call a lot of isolation plays. So he will get the ball. He will cut. He will move. He's also 6'8", so he makes defensive plays. He can rebound in traffic. There's a lot of things that he can do. But Gordon Hayward is such an unselfish player. And then I don't want to say that he is the focal point, but he averaged 17 points a game. That's nothing to scoff about. Everyone's talking about what the Lakers are missing with Avery Bradley. Well, this man averaged even more. And they don't have two studs like LeBron and AD. So having Gordon Hayward on the court just, I felt like, opened things up for them and gave them a jolt of energy.
Richard Jefferson, ESPN, thinks Gordon Hayward's the key. All right, back to your Celtics calls. One of the big things we were hitting on was Marcus Smart. Is he a catalyst or an impediment? Your thoughts on that and game four and Gordon Hayward and whatever else you want. Tyler in Manchester. Go ahead, Tyler.
Hey, guys. How are you doing today?
We're good.
I would like to discuss game four tonight against the Heat. I think we have our work cut out for us, but I also think having Hayward back in the lineup is awesome.
Okay. There you go. They do have the work cut out for us. What does Miami do? Did Miami play as much zone as they did in this last game as the game before?
Didn't feel like it. Yeah, didn't feel like it. So, you know, I want to see how that goes. Also, they pulled Butler off the floor at the end of that game. You remember that?
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that weird?
I don't know.
So, like, I just wonder if, you know, to me, the big thing in the series is about the pushback. So, winning the third game when you're down 2-0, not that hard a task.
Does the 3-4-day break help or hurt the Celts?
Hurts.
Why?
Hurts, because they had momentum after game three. Now all that sort of has dissipated. They've all been away from, you know, games anyway. I don't want to say away from the floor. I think Miami's had time to process it, run it through its system, get it out. And that's it. Now Miami goes right back and says, you know, again, you take the emotion out of it. Miami looks at it and says, we're still up 2-1. We kicked their ass in the second half of those first two games, or in the fourth quarter at the very least. And we're going to do the same thing in game four. I think Miami's confidence now, any chance that you made a dent in Miami's confidence, I think has now worn off. I think that's gone.
I think it helps, especially for someone like Kemba Walker, who, again, I think has been better-ish in these last few games. But I was starting to question whether or not his knee was banged up and if he was feeling some of that. So I think the layoff potentially helps the Celtics.
I just don't think the Celtics' problems are physical.
Well, but as you know, Maz, the Celts aren't very deep. And those guys' minutes, you know, that Miami runs a deeper bench. And so the minutes were piling up on your starters. And so you don't think that layoff could help you?
I don't think that. I think it hurts more than it helps. I do, because I think you got the momentum going in your way a little bit. Now 4 days go by. Now you go right back to square one.
Joe in New York, what do you think?
Guys, Jay Crowder is not a weapon unless you leave him wide open on the three-point line with no one within 10 feet of him. I mean, my God, it seems like all series long this Bridgie's been hitting threes at pivotal moments with no Celtics players anywhere near him. And he can't do anything offensively except shoot threes. So just get a hand in his face. I mean, have you guys noticed this, and has it pissed you off like it has for me?
Well,
I know I may sound like kind of crazy, but it just seems like it would be a really simple fix to shut him down and stop letting him take these wide-open threes.
If you go back to game two, he hit some incredible shots with guys in his face. So it was like he was wide open in game two. As I watch your former Bridgies, Crowder and Olynyk, I think Olynyk freaking blows.
He does.
He sucks. Yeah, I think he's gotten worse.
He sucks.
And look, you didn't suck this bad with the Celtics. Mm. I mean, you sucked, but oh, I feel he's wretched. I feel Crowder's gotten better. And I think the numbers back, he's shooting better than he normally shoots, right? Like, isn't his average way up?
Yeah, he was shooting like almost 45% after game two, I think.
Forget about it. I mean, he's not that guy.
He didn't shoot in the last game. He went 2-for-10. So when that happens, I think, I don't want to say he's a non-factor, but he is on the offensive end.
Anthony and Natick, Marcus Smart, is he a catalyst or an impediment?
Before I say it, Mike, I just want to tell you, good for you. You keep pushing that narrative. I backed you on the Horford thing, and I certainly back you on this one.
Thanks,
as well.
Thanks, babe, so, yes.
I love it. So I'm going to stay with it. It's a little wishy-washy, but just let me explain. I say he's a catalyst 90% of the time. One guy brought up an example about how, you know, he got in trouble. He's been doing this stuff since he's been in college. And the thing with Marcus Smart is, I think one of you guys said he doesn't know his role. I believe he knows his role 90% of the time, but then he gets hot and he gets in his head and he starts to forget who he is. But I believe he's the guy that can fall off the reservation that you can pull him back on. So the question you got to ask yourself is his little antics and hissy fits, Is it worth what he brings to the team? And ultimately, I blame Brad and I blame Danny, because when you're managing personalities in the NBA, that's who you look at, not the team.
Okay, Brad and Danny, they're rolling it.
Well, so he brings up a good point, though. I mean, you can go through a litany of great teams in the NBA, and they all had one guy that was a little on the edge. You know, whether it was, you know, Rodman, or take your pick of any one of a million guys. Like, there's always a guy who's sort of teetering there. The Pistons had about four of them, for crying out loud, and it's the coach and leader's job to rein him in. I think part of the problem is that this team doesn't have a locker room leader, a clear one. So a veteran guy there that everyone respected really rein him in.
Yeah, and how did that work with Kyrie and Horford last year?
Well, right, so those guys aren't the guy. I mean, you know, they need someone that has one that players will respect.
Well, let's find out. It's just going to take time, but maybe it's the room.
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe there is no one. Maybe, again, it's this thing that it's not just immaturity. It's what they are. Marcus Smart is an over-emotional hothead. Jaylen Brown thinks he's the smartest player in the room, and Jason Tatum thinks he's the best player in the league. And you put it all together, and they never grow out of it. And that's just what they think they are, and it never works. No matter who you bring in, Horford, Kyrie, Mahatma Gandhi. Well, it's just not the Zen master, Phil Jackson. No one can figure it out because those guys just aren't going to mix together. That's a possibility.
Of course it is. Yeah, again, it's happened to other teams. Sure it has.
Nick in the car. Go ahead, Nick.
Guys, I think you spent a lot of time talking about the argument that happened, but what we haven't concentrated on is the big difference in Game 3 was, I think, that the Celtics offensively did really well against the zone, which we can all agree they did terrible in Game 2. They actually got shut down for the whole basic third quarter. Another big thing is they on defense, they did very good against the pick and roll, which they got decimated in Game 2 also. I think it's all about adjustments. That's what's going to win the series for them.
Okay, well, let's see what Miami comes up against you. Spoelstra's pretty good. Pat Riley's pretty good. And I don't know, I felt like Miami was in less zone in that last game. Or maybe it just looked that way because the Celtics broke it down. But I don't know. You got to get a hoopologist to tell you about that. But it felt like they were playing less. We continue with your Celtics calls after Murray's 90-second update. There are no commercials here.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.